Okay, we are in Daniel chapter 7 this morning, and we are making our way through this book. As we have talked about in introduction and as we've gone through this book, basically you can divide the book of Daniel in half. It's got 12 chapters, and you can take the first six chapters, the last six chapters, and they're very different from each other. We know the first six chapters rather well. We know the stories that are in those first six chapters, and that's what they are. They're historical references to the life of Daniel. When you read about him being brought from Jerusalem, from Judah, and brought into captivity in Babylon when he was just a teenager, and yet he's there as in Babylon for 70 years. And while he's there, Nebuchadnezzar has the dream about the great image. While he's there, he and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, get thrown into the fiery furnace in chapter 3. While he's there in Babylonian captivity, Nebuchadnezzar has another dream about a great tree in chapter 4. In chapter 5 is when you move on to Belshazzar, who we're going to read about this morning. That Belshazzar was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, and he was the Babylonian king in chapter 5 when Babylon falls to the Medes and Persians. And then you get in, and that's when you got the handwriting on the wall, and so we know that story. And then you get into chapter 6, the early years of the Persian dynasty, and that's when Daniel's thrown into the lion's den when he's just a young lad of in his early 80s. And so those are the stories that we know. That's the part of the book of Daniel that we know. The second half of the book of Daniel, we don't know as well. There's some reasons for that, probably because we haven't taught and preached on it as often as we've done that for the first six chapters. But also because when you get to the second six chapters, they're very different. The first six chapters are historical in nature. You read them, you can understand them about events that are taking place in a man's life. You get to the second six chapters, and they are not historically inclined as these stories would be. They are prophetic. They are about visions that Daniel is seeing. And the language that's used in the second half of this book in these last six chapters is apocalyptic language. And that simply means that this is language that's being used much like the book of Revelation, that's being written in signs and symbols. And so it's very symbolic. It's figurative kind of language, which is sometimes difficult to understand. And so we sometimes avoid those sections of Scripture. We say, oh, I don't know what that means. But there is a lot for us to learn from these last six chapters and a lot to see. These were chapter 2 and chapter 4 were dreams that Nebuchadnezzar had. Well, we're going to see in this section, these are visions that Daniel had, visions that God gave to Daniel, and especially here in chapter 7. Chapter 7 is kind of a transition chapter. We mentioned in chapter 2, when we began chapter 2, about Nebuchadnezzar's dream, that from chapter 2 through chapter 7 was actually written in Aramaic. Rest of the New Testament, by and large, most of the Old Testament's written in what language? Hebrew. You've got this chunk here, and a few other places in the Old Testament, but you've got this chunk here from chapter 2 through chapter 7 that's written in the Aramaic language, which was kind of the universal language of Babylon and Assyria and of that day and age. And perhaps that indicates that this section of the book was written especially so that the Babylonians, so that the Persians could understand it. But when you get to chapter 8 and through the rest of that book, it's going to be back in Hebrew. And so maybe that section's written more for the Jews than it was for the Babylonians or the Persians. But when we get into chapter 7, what we are seeing as the main message of this chapter, and really we could say for the rest of the book, but for this chapter, is that earthly kingdoms are going to be destroyed. And we're going to see four of them again here in chapter 7. Earthly kingdoms are going to be destroyed, but God's kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and it will never be destroyed. And so we're seeing things from heaven's viewpoint in this chapter, rather than just reading about earthly events like we have for the last six chapters. So, chapter 7, language is going to be a little bit different here. There's going to be some symbolism here and some figurative language that I want us to try to dig into, but we only have about 39 minutes to try to cover some of this territory. And so get into chapter 7, verse 1. And you're given this the background to this vision that Daniel has about four beasts. Notice the time marker in chapter 7, verse 1 is the first year of Belshazzar. Well, do you remember what we read in chapter 5, what the time marker was at the beginning of chapter 5? Belshazzar was the king, and this was the very end of the Babylonian rule. This was the last night that Babylon would even be a nation, a ruling nation. Well, what we're doing in chapter 7 is Daniel's backing up. He's going back in history to the first year that Belshazzar was king. And this is, Daniel says in verse 1, this was a dream, a vision that he saw on his bed at night. And so he did what you should do. When you think about something and you don't want to forget it, what should you do? Write it down. Have you ever forgotten to write something down? And then you've thought later, well, what was it? What was I think? What was I going to do? You've been there. You've done that. When you're thinking about something, you better go write it down. That's the beauty of having smartphones today, is you can immediately make a note so that you don't forget it. That's what Daniel's doing. He's writing down his dream, writing down, the New King James says at the end of verse 1, writing down the main facts, one, for him to be able to remember it, but obviously so that we could remember it, so that we could read about it here in Daniel chapter 7, and so that we could see sort of a verification of these events that take place. So here's the vision. The vision that Daniel sees is about four beasts that he sees in this vision. You get into chapter 7 and verse 2. Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, think about this. Here's what he sees. The four winds of heaven, and he's going to use that expression again in the book a couple times. So these winds coming from heaven, four. In apocalyptic language, even numbers are symbolic. When you read the book of Revelation, one of the things you need to remember in the book of Revelation is that it's not written to be understood literally. It's written in symbols and signs. Even numbers are figurative and symbolic. And so as you read through this chapter, think about that. Sometimes numbers are symbolic, sometimes they're not. Four winds. The number four was symbolic for earthly things, for worldly things, and maybe that's the indication here, but winds were something that, typically speaking, in this kind of literature, was talking about something that came from God. God controls the winds. And so these winds of heaven came, and what were the winds doing in verse 2? They're stirring up, they're churning the great sea. Well, to the Jews, what was the great sea? It's the Mediterranean Sea, was their great sea. And so Daniel sees these winds, and the winds are kind of churning, they're stirring up, and almost causing a fight amongst the waters. Well, what's he going to see coming out of this sea? In verse 3, I saw four great beasts, not little beasts, not minor political groups, four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. And so then he begins to describe these beasts for us. In verse 4, he says, here's the first one. The first was like a lion, and it had eagle's wings. As you read through this, he's going to be describing for us four kingdoms. And if you look over in, I don't want to get too far ahead. He's describing for us four kingdoms. Can you remember anywhere else in the book of Daniel that described four kingdoms? Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2, when he sees this great image, and he sees the great image with the head of gold, the arms of chest of silver, the belly and thighs of bronze, the legs were made out of iron, and the feet had iron and clay mixed in. Do you remember the image that we had on the screen when we talked about chapter 2 and the four world empires that Nebuchadnezzar was dreaming about in Daniel chapter 2? Well, you come to Daniel chapter 7, he's going to describe for us four beasts, and the interpretation that's coming from this is this is a description of four kingdoms. You think these are the same four kingdoms that Nebuchadnezzar saw? They're the exact same kingdoms. What Nebuchadnezzar saw in his dream are the same four kingdoms, but Nebuchadnezzar saw them as a great image. Daniel is seeing them described as animals. And again, that's figurative language to talk about what kind of nations they were. And so in verse 4, he's seeing the Babylonian Empire. The first was like a lion. Jeremiah described Babylon like a lion, and it had eagle's wings. Eagle's wings would describe the swiftness with which they would move. And I watched until its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. We saw that same terminology about Nebuchadnezzar back in chapter 4, talking about him standing on 2 feet, about how a man's heart was given to him. You remember what happened to Nebuchadnezzar? When he, instead of having a man's heart, he was given a beast's heart and went out and was eating grass like an oxen. Verse 4 is describing the Babylonian Empire like a lion that had eagle's wings, and describing what happened there to Nebuchadnezzar. In verse 5, he sees a different kingdom. Suddenly, another beast. So he sees these beasts coming out of the sea. And so he sees the first beast come out, and then he sees this second beast come out. And verse 5 says it's like a bear. Well, what was the next nation that came after Babylon? Who conquered Babylon? The Medo-Persian Empire. And so that's what he's seeing here. But notice what he says in verse 5. It was raised up on one side. Well, it is a kingdom made up of two empires, essentially, the Medes and the Persians. But the Persians were stronger. They had conquered the Medes, and so it's raised up on one side. What is there, one side of this Medo-Persian group that is stronger than the other? Yes, we're going to see that when we get to the next chapter, too, by the way. Same kind of idea that one part of this beast is stronger than the other. And so it was like a bear, verse 5. It was raised up on one side because the Persians were stronger. Had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And they said thus to it, "Arise, devour much flesh." What's the meaning of the three ribs in his mouth? Could be symbolic. Could be describing how vicious of a beast it was. The three ribs could be talking about the three nations, three major nations that the Medes and Persians had conquered. They conquered, before they conquered Babylon, they conquered Lydia, then they conquered Babylon, and then they conquered Egypt. Could be talking about those three nations that nation had devoured. Verse 6, after this I looked, and there was another. So here's the third beast, a third nation coming. It's like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. So the Babylonians had eagle's wings in verse 4, but now this nation has four wings of a bird. What nation is this? This is Greece. Why would it be described as having four wings? When you see Alexander the Great come on the scene in a very short time, you think about the swiftness by which he conquered the world. In 10 years, he conquered the known world. He sat down after he conquered India, And history says he sat down and he wept because there was no more worlds for him to conquer. At a very young age, he dies at 33 years of age. And so swiftness is being described here. The beast also, the end of verse 6, the beast also had four heads and dominion was given to it. Why is it being described as having four heads? It could be figurative, talking about its mastery of the world, or it could be talking about, as we're going to see later in the book, When Alexander the Great died, what happened to his empire? Wasn't given to his descendant. It was divided up among his four generals. And so perhaps that's what's being described here, is his nation after he dies being divided up among his four generals. But verse 7, and for the rest of this chapter, is the main focus. The focus is not on the first three nations, the first three beasts. The focus is on the fourth beast. I saw in the night vision, verse 7, and behold, a fourth beast. Now, it's not like a lion, a bear, or a leopard. It's not like any other beast, and so it's not described like any other beast. It's dreadful and terrible. It's exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring and breaking into pieces and trampling the residue with its feet. Would you go back for just a second to chapter 2? Go back to chapter 2 real quick. I want you to see this as Daniel describes this image that Nebuchadnezzar sees and the three nations that would come before the Roman Empire. You get down to Daniel chapter 2 and verse 40. Daniel 2 and verse 40, the fourth kingdom, the same as the fourth beast in chapter 7. Daniel 2 and verse 40, the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron. Does that sound like what we just read? And as much as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything, and like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all of the others. Isn't that what we just read about the beast? In chapter, come back to chapter 7, verse 7. Exceedingly strong, teeth like iron teeth, breaking in pieces, trampling others. This is describing the Roman Empire and how they came on the scene as a ferocious, vindictive, brutal world empire. But notice what he says at the end of verse 7. It was different. He saw these first three beasts. He says, this one's different than the ones that went before, and it had 10 horns. So here's, he sees this beast, and this beast has 10 horns. Now remember, some of this could be, some even the numbers could be symbolic. Is this describing 10 literal horns that he sees? Or could the number 10 was used symbolically, figuratively, to describe something that was infinite, to describe something that was limitless? And that's the way the number 10 was often used. Could it be described that? Horns were used for power. That was a symbol for power. If a beast had horns, it was describing his power, could be describing kings and rulers. And so here's this beast. He's got 10 horns, perhaps describing 10 literal horns, or just saying that this was a complete beast with the fullness of power. And I was considering the horns, verse 10, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn, this one horn, this little horn that came up among them and plucked out three other horns, there were eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking pompous words. You have this image? You got the picture? Here's this fourth beast that comes out. It's not like the first three. It's not like those first three nations. This nation is vicious. This nation has iron teeth. They devour, they crush, they trample. But it's got 10 horns, maybe 10 rulers. And then there's this one little horn that comes up that takes, but this one little horn begins to speak. So this one horn is personified. And this one horn has eyes that see, and it has a mouth. But what does this mouth speak? This pompous words, or great boasts. Is that the New American Standard that says great boasts? So here's this mouth, and he's going to say that at least three more times in this chapter, describing this horn that speaks pompous words, speaks boastful things. What is this all about? What's this fourth beast? What are these 10 horns? What is this little horn? That's what Daniel is focused on. That's what Daniel is most concerned about. He's not concerned about those first three beasts. When we get into this, look at verse 15 real quick, where it just says, I was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. What he's most troubled about is this fourth beast. And that's what he begins asking in verse 19. I wish to know the truth about the fourth beast. That's the one that he's most concerned about, trying to figure out what is this all about. Well, we're gonna let the text explain this to us as we go through this. As Daniel is describing his vision for us, he describes a heavenly scene. He has seen this vision of things coming, these beasts coming out of the sea, but then he sees a heavenly scene. He's taken to heaven to see something that's happening in heaven. Verse 9, he sees a judgment scene. He says, I watched till thrones were put in place. And that word watch is going to be throughout this. Verse 11, I watched. Verse 13, I was watching. It's just throughout this. Verse 21, I was watching. It's all over this chapter. So Daniel is in this vision. I'm watching, I'm watching, I'm watching. Verse 9, I watched till thrones, these are judgment thrones, were put in place. I was watching, I could see this vision of heaven, of thrones being put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated on the throne. Who's the Ancient of Days? He's going to be mentioned again in verse 13. He's going to be mentioned again in verse 22, I think. The Ancient of Days. Who's that? That's God the Father. That's the Father in heaven sitting upon His throne, being described as the Ancient of Days merely because He is the Eternal One. He is the timeless one. And so God sits upon his throne, and in this case, his throne of judgment. And his garment was white as snow. He's absolutely pure. The hair of his head was like pure wool. He has authority of wisdom to make these judgments. His throne was a fiery flame. Fire was often used as a symbol of divine judgment. His throne was a fiery flame, its wheels a burning fire. Josh just taught the book of Ezekiel a while ago, and you may remember from the book of Ezekiel, this kind of imagery, kind of a chariot throne that was on fire. That was, at least a chariot throne was common in that day. And so it's like a throne on wheels that has fire. Look in verse 10. A fiery stream, a river of fire issued from his throne. The wrath of God is being poured out here. I mean, when you see God's throne, for those who are faithful to God, it's not a fearful thing. When you see God's throne, for those who are his children, it's not something where we see fire coming out. But for those who are going to receive the judgment of God, it's a fiery stream. Came forth from him. And around him, look at this, 1,000,000s ministered to him. How big is God's army? How big is God's angelic army? He is the Lord of hosts, as he's described even in this book. And so 1,000,000s ministered to him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. I want you to see this image of the God of heaven sitting upon his throne of judgment with fire coming out, with surrounded by his army of angels, and the court was seated. It says at the end of verse 10, the court basically is in session. It's time for judgment to begin, and the books were opened. Does that sound like Revelation to you? Revelation 20, the books were opened. So what's happening here? Daniel sees this vision of all of these things, these beasts coming out, but he sees this fourth beast, and it's vicious, it's cruel, and we're going to see later in the chapter how it was bringing punishment and persecution upon God's people. But then Daniel sees this judgment scene. Ooh, a judgment scene. So we've got this vicious beast, this vicious nation, but then we've got a judgment scene. What are we seeing? We're seeing that the God of heaven sitting upon his throne is going to judge this nation for what they do. Verse 11, I watched then because of the sound of what? The pompous words, the great boasting. So he's seeing and hearing again this same thing. So he's seeing this little horn. I watched then because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking. How can a horn speak? He's seeing this in a vision. What is this horn that is speaking? And so he says, I watched till the beast was slain. So here's this horn, one of the rulers of the beast, this kingdom, and he watched until the beast was slain and its body destroyed and given to the burning flame. He sees the judgment that's going to take place, and then he looks back and he sees this pompous ruler, this pompous horn of this beast, and he says, what's going to happen to them? And then he watched until this great beast was destroyed and this ruler was taken out of place, and they are judged by God, and that's what the end of verse 11 is talking about, given to the burning flame, talking about the judgment of this fourth beast. Now, who is the fourth beast? What nation is this? It's the Roman Empire. Who is this fourth beast? Well, it's the Roman Empire. What do we know about this beast? I want you to hold your finger in Daniel chapter 7. I want you to go over to Revelation chapter 13. And if you put notes in your Bible, you might just write next to Daniel chapter 7. You might write next to this fourth beast. You might write Revelation chapter 13. Because the description that we're reading in Daniel chapter 7 of this fourth beast is the exact same description that we read about the beast of the sea in Revelation chapter 13. Sometimes we don't understand the book of Revelation very readily, and one reason for that is because we don't read and study the Old Testament as much as we should. If we knew Daniel chapter 7, we might have a better insight into Revelation chapter 13. Look in Revelation chapter 13. Here's John writing. And John says, I stood on the sand of the sea. Do you see? Get this idea. Daniel sees something, sees these these beasts coming out of the sea. What does John see in Revelation 13? Same thing. I'm standing on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising out of the sea. Now, John is going to give us some different perspective on him, but some similar. Having seven heads and how many horns? He's got 10 horns, just like Daniel's beast of the fourth of the Roman Empire. He's got seven heads, 10 horns, and on his horns were 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. What was that one little horn doing? Speaking blasphemy. Now, verse 2. Now the beast which I saw was what? Like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. Huh. What did we just read about the first three beasts before we read about the fourth beast? We just read those. You still have your finger in Daniel 7, right? You didn't lose that, did you? Flip back over to Daniel 7 just real quick. I want you to see this. Daniel chapter 7 and verse 12. As for the rest of the beasts, which beasts? Babylon, Medes, Persians, Greeks. Which beasts? What we just read about in Revelation 13 and verse 2. The leopard, the bear, and the lion. As for those, Daniel 7 and verse 12, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. What's that talking about? Well, obviously, each empire came along and conquered that previous world empire, but they lived on within that next empire. And so that next regime comes along, and the Babylonians still had that Babylonian influence still was there in the Medes and Persians, still there in the Greeks, and still existed even in the Roman Empire. And so when we read about these beasts conquering each other, they're absorbing those nations before them. And so they're absorbing some of their characteristics, absorbing some of their might and their power, absorbing some of their government. And so it's interesting that Daniel 7 verse 12 says that they were prolonged for a time. Their influence remained even after they were conquered. Look back in Revelation 13 and verse 2. That's interesting that John sees in Revelation 13 and verse 2 these beasts or a beast like these three. The dragon, the end of verse 2. The dragon, that's the devil, that's Satan. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. And I saw, Revelation 13, verse 3, I saw one of the heads as it had been, I saw one of its heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his head wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshiped the dragon, the devil, who gave authority to the beast. Who's this beast? And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with the beast? He's too powerful. He's too mighty. Nobody's going to be able to take him down. Verse 5. And he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. Huh. Didn't we read that about the little horn back in Revelation or Daniel chapter 7? What was that little horn doing? Speaking blasphemy, speaking boastful things. And he was given authority to continue, verse 5 says, for 42 months. Tuck that away. We're going to get that in Daniel chapter 7. Then he opened his mouth and blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name. Who did? This little horn of Daniel chapter 7, this mouth that's speaking of this beast in Revelation chapter 13, to blaspheme the name of God, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. And it was granted to him to make war with the saints. Tuck that away. It was granted for him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. Tuck that away. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life, of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear to hear, let him hear. If you are a Christian and you are living in the time when John wrote the book of Revelation, and you are living, what nation is in power? Rome. John is describing for these Christians what is happening around them as these Roman emperors, and maybe he's describing a particular Roman emperor who was going around speaking blasphemous things and even demanding that people worship him as the Roman emperor. Revelation chapter 13, describing the beast of the sea, is describing the same thing that Daniel is describing for us in Daniel chapter 7. We're going to see some of these same things. Come back to Daniel chapter 7. So he sees this vision. He sees this heavenly part of this vision where God is setting up his judgment throne. But then he sees another thing happening in heaven. Verse 13, I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man. One like the Son of Man. When Jesus came to earth, what did he call himself? The Son of Man. Where did Jesus get that idea? Did he just make it up out of the air? Jesus, when he calls himself the Son of Man, is calling upon verses just like this, where he's described in the Old Testament as the Son of Man. So this is deity. This is Jesus coming with the clouds of heaven. Throughout the Old Testament, we read about deity riding on clouds. And he, who's the he, the Son of Man, Jesus came to. And if I were you, I would circle the word to in your Bible. It's a little word, but it's an important word. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Jesus is coming to the ancient. Well, when did Jesus ever come to heaven? When did Jesus ever come to God in heaven? When he was raised from the dead and 40 days later ascended back to his Father in heaven. And when he ascended back to his Father, he was coming from the earth and going to heaven. Why is the word to important? Because your premillennial friends want to take Daniel 7 and a number of other passages. They want to take Daniel 7 and make Daniel 7 be talking about the end of the world, where their premillennial doctrine, completely false, believes that Jesus is going to come from the Ancient of Days and set up his kingdom. But this verse does not say that Jesus is coming from the Ancient of Days. It says he is going to the Ancient of Days. What happens when Jesus goes to the Ancient of Days? You remember when Peter stood up in Acts chapter 2? And in Acts chapter 2, he's preaching about Jesus, and he talks about the heart of that sermon is about the resurrection and how David's tomb was still there, but Jesus' tomb was empty, and how Jesus was not left in Hades, nor did his soul see corruption, but that he was raised by God and that he ascended. And Peter says he's at the right hand of God. He's pouring out that which you now see and hear. And he said, let all the house of Israel know assuredly. Acts 2 and verse 36. Let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God has made this Jesus whom you've crucified, God has made him what? Both Lord and Christ. When did that happen? Right here. When was Christ made both Lord and Christ? When he was raised from the dead, when he ascended into heaven, he was made to be king. King of kings, Lord of lords. And that's what he has seen. Peter preaches about it in Acts 2 and verse 36. We've got it here. When he goes to the Ancient of Days in verse 13. Verse 14, then when? When Jesus came to the Ancient of Days, when he ascended into heaven, then to him was given dominion, he's king, and glory and a kingdom. When did Jesus' kingdom come into existence? After he ascended into heaven. His kingdom will not be established at the end of time when he comes from. That's not what this passage is talking about. It says when he went to the Ancient of Days, he was given dominion and glory and a kingdom. His church, his kingdom was established when he ascended into heaven, and that's when he was made to be Lord and Christ. Look at what it says, that all, not some, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. That's throughout the book of Revelation 2, that all nations would be there. His dominion is an everlasting dominion. I want you to think about that. What happened to the Babylonians? Everlasting dominion? Nope. Medes and Persians? Nope. Greeks? Nope. Rome? What about the fourth beast? This horrible, vicious fourth beast. Are they going to rule forever? Nope. That's what Daniel is learning. That's what John was talking about in Revelation 13. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom, what happened to the four kingdoms? They all passed away. His kingdom shall never be destroyed. Remember when Daniel was interpreting for Nebuchadnezzar his dream, and he described for him, I told you Daniel 2 and verse 44 is one of the most important verses in all of the Bible. And he describes for him that fourth kingdom. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom. which shall never be destroyed. The same kingdom that Nebuchadnezzar saw in Daniel chapter 2 is the same kingdom that Daniel saw in Daniel chapter 7 verse 14 is the same kingdom that Jesus came and established in Acts chapter 2 when his church came into existence. And so Daniel is seeing some things and he's trying to grasp them. He sees these beasts. And he understands somewhat the beast, but this fourth beast has got his attention. He's concerned about this fourth beast. But then his attention is taken to heaven. Oh, a judgment scene. Oh, this judge is going to take care of this beast. And oh, wait a minute, look at this. There is this king who is now ascended into heaven, and he has a kingdom. Oh, it's not like this kingdom or this kingdom or this kingdom. He has a kingdom that is never going to be destroyed. He's got a kingdom that will last forever. He's got a kingdom. It's not the Babylonians for the Babylonians and not the Greeks for the Greeks. This is a kingdom for all peoples, for all languages, for all tribes, for all people. What is that? It's the church. That's what you're a part of. That's what Jesus purchased with his own blood. And so in verse 15, yeah. Jerry, real quick, I've got like 8 minutes here. He came up to the Ancient of Days. Yeah. Right. He's going up to the Ancient of Days, not coming down from, but he's going up to the Ancient of Days. And so what Daniel is seeing, remember, Daniel is writing this. This is about 553 B.C. 553 B. What is B.C.? Don't say common era. It's before Christ. So 553 years before Christ. So tack on 33 years of Jesus' life and then the establishment of the church. So 553 plus 33 is what? 586? So 586 years before the church is ever established in Jerusalem in Acts chapter 2, what's Daniel seeing? He's seeing it. He's seeing Christ ascend into heaven. He's seeing him go to the Ancient of Days. He's seeing this kingdom come into existence. But he sees this and he's grieved in his spirit, verse 15. He's grieved within his body because of what he sees. And so he came near and he asked him, he says, tell me what's going on. Tell me the truth of this. And so he told me the interpretation of it. And he said, verse 17, those great beasts which are four kings. Or kingdoms. Look, tie in verse 23. Look at verse 23 real quick. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom. So what are the beasts? He tells us. We don't have to guess. The beasts are the kingdoms, the four kingdoms that we just talked about. They will arise out of the earth. They will conquer one after the other. Verse 18. But the saints, that's a key word in this chapter. We're going to see it about six more times here. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom, not these little kingdoms that keep passing away, and possess the kingdom, how long? Forever, even forever and ever. This kingdom is going to last. And so then I wish to know the truth, Daniel says, about the fourth beast, which was different from all of the others, exceedingly dreadful, its teeth of iron, nails of bronze, which devoured broken pieces, trampled the residue with its feet. And I wanted to know about this fourth beast. Verse 20, I wanted to know about the 10 horns that were on its head. I wanted to know about the other horn which came up before which the three fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth which spoke blasphemous words. Third time we've seen that statement. Whose appearance was greater than his fellows. I wanted to know about this. And so I was watching, verse 21. I was watching, and what happened? Again, the same horn, that little horn, was making war against the saints. This little horn is a part of the fourth beast, which is the Roman Empire. This little horn was making war against the saints. Let me ask you a question. Did the Roman emperors ever make war against the saints? Did the Roman Empire ever make war against the saints? Yes, repeatedly. Did they ever persecute them? Yes, severely. So he was making war against the saints and prevailing against them. What's the first word you have in verse 22? I've got the word until. So here's this great beast speaking pompous words, this great ruler, and he's persecuting the saints of God until. What does the word until mean? Doesn't last forever. It's not, you can't ring bells today. It's against my, until the Ancient of Days came and a judgment was made. He saw that judgment. A judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. So Daniel is seeing what John saw in the book of Revelation. John in the book of Revelation saw the fall of the Roman nation, the Roman Empire. Was that important to the Christians that John was writing to? Yes, because they were suffering persecution at the hands of the Romans. And so John says the end is coming and the Roman Empire is going to fall and be judged. Daniel said that 600 years before it ever happened, before John ever wrote those words. Very quickly, starting in verse 23, here's the fourth beast. Fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom, Roman Empire on the earth, which shall be different from all other kingdoms, shall devour the whole earth, trample it, break it in pieces. It is a horrible, vicious nation. The ten horns are what? Ten kings. Now, is that literally you count out ten kings and you count ten on your finger? Okay, or is that a figurative number? Maybe one or the other. The ten horns, that we know that they're the ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom. And another, the 11th, the little horn, shall arise after them. So the little horn is a king. That's what we learn in verse 24. Little horn is a king. He shall be different from the first ones and shall subdue three kings before him. So a little horn is one of the kings of the fourth beast. He, verse 25, shall speak, fourth time, pompous words against the Most High and shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law. And the saint shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time. Remember in Revelation 13, I told you to remember 42 months when we read it. Other places in Revelation, in the book of Revelation, we read about 42 months. We read about 1,260 days. We read about time, times, and half a time. Those are all the same thing when you read the book of Revelation. Same time measurement. What's 1,260 days? What's 42 months? It's 3.5 years. That's two ones. That's three. And half a time. So you got 3.5. Now, is this to be taken literally as 3.5 years or figuratively? Typically speaking, when you read that expression in the book of Revelation about 1,260 days, or 42 months, or time, times, and half a time, 3.5 years. It's not to be taken literally. It's not to be put on a calendar and say, okay, we're going to mark off these days until it's done. That terminology is used to describe persecution against God's people. And the time frame of that persecution oftentimes. What does that mean? Can you measure that out? No. But 3.5 is half of 7. 7, symbolically, is perfect, is completeness, is fullness. And God says, you're going to be persecuted, but not to completeness. You're going to be persecuted, but not to fullness. It's going to be half of that. It's going to be horrible. It's going to be terrible. And it's going to be in an indefinite amount of time, but it's going to be a finite amount of time. It's not going to be infinite. It's going to be a finite, limited amount of time, and that's what's being described here, is that their persecution would last. It would last for a period of time, but it was limited to a time that God had set in motion. Verse 26, the court shall be seated. How do we know that the persecution was going to end? Because judgment was going to come upon the Roman nation. The court shall be seated, verse 26, they shall take away his dominion. The dominion of the empire, the dominion of this 11th horn, to consume and destroy it forever. Then the kingdom and dominion, what are we talking about now? Not Rome, we're talking about God. We're talking about Christ. The kingdom and dominion. The greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. This is the end of it, Daniel says. My thoughts were greatly troubled, my countenance changed, and I kept this matter in my heart. What's happening in Daniel chapter 7? Daniel sees a vision of the Roman Empire, this fourth beast. He sees a vision of what appears to be one of the kings, one of the emperors of this Roman Empire. There have been a lot of speculation about who this little horn was. Some people have tried to make it out to be the Antichrist, those people who teach and believe the doctrine of premillennialism. want it to be the Antichrist. Every bit of that is false. We don't have time to get into it. Second bell is rung. Every bit of premillennialism is false. There's not a part of it that's biblically sound. Some people have tried to make it out to be Antiochus Epiphanes, who was a ruler of the Syrians, of the Greeks, in the 2nd century B.C. Doesn't fit the timeline. Some people that I love and respect and who I believe have great biblical knowledge have tried to make out the little horn to be the Roman Catholic Church. Did the Roman Catholic Church ever speak great boasts against God, against His church, against His kingdom? And there's some good writings that you can read that are very persuasive in regard to this possibly being the papacy and the Roman Catholic Church. What seems to fit to me, if it's not that, is that it is one of the Roman emperors. I think this fits right in with Revelation chapter 13. And the book of Revelation is being written at a time when God's people are being persecuted by the Roman Empire, and especially in the last part of the 1st century AD, being persecuted by a Roman emperor by the name of Domitian, who called himself Lord and God and required the people to call him Lord and God, and persecuted God's people viciously. There's a lot that could fit to make this horn, this little horn out, to be Domitian. If you take Daniel chapter 7 and Revelation chapter 13, put those together. There's a lot here. I wish we didn't have to be flying along at 100 miles per hour to look at this, but I hope you have a little better sense of Daniel chapter 7, a little better understanding of what Daniel saw. But forget about the little horn. Think about God's kingdom. That's the point. God's eternal kingdom, the church, that's what we get to be a part of. Thank you all very much for your attention this morning.